is The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight with the halfway point of The Download. Abraham Levitan is the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that talks to musicians about the music industry. Tonight we start our monthly segment with Abraham about different issues for both artists and consumers. Abraham Levitan is a Chicago musician. He fronted the band Baby Teeth. He also did Shame That Tune at the Hideout. And his company Piano Power is all about providing in-house lessons from real artists who teach the students what they want to play. No chopsticks.
Well, not unless that's their dream.
That's their dream. Right? Good to see you, Ram. Thanks
good
for being back.
Good to see you, Justin.
Yeah, so we want to talk about issues in music, and I think this is a good week to do it. What I've been ranting about all night is streaming, but not necessarily streaming sites like Apple or Spotify. What I'm finding trouble with is artists signing exclusive deals. We've seen this with Chance this week. Chance the Rapper, Coloring Book, is only available on Apple Music for 2 weeks. We saw it with Beyonce on Tidal, with Lemonade. We saw it with Kanye West on Tidal. It just seems like what we're finding or what we're seeing with the new releases from really popular artists are sort of exclusive deals with one company.
Mm-hmm. And they can kind of go in a different way when you take your eye off the ball. For example, Kanye was very public about Life of Pablo will never be on Apple Music, ever. And then when nobody was looking, like less than a week later, it was on Apple Music and on iTunes. So I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors and a lot of big talk when a record first comes out. I mean, you and I were talking before that streaming is so confusing to artists right now.
Right, they're not making money off of it.
Right, and that if you are offered an exclusive deal by one of these big services, you feel like the man.
Right.
And maybe that little moment of bliss and publicity makes you feel like you're on top of it.
And I wonder if there's obviously some sort of monetary deal. You know, Chance the Rapper is getting paid to exclusively run it on Apple Music and probably getting paid up front what he probably would never see from just being on a streaming service.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that kind of information, at least in the 30 seconds of time that I put into it, was ungoogleable. I was trying to find out, like, what is Beyonce getting from Tidal? And I guess maybe it's marital security would be the answer to that question.
She doesn't need it.
at this point. If you put out an album about infidelity and how horrible your marriage is, at least do it in a way that supports your husband's business.
Right. Always. Right. Well, I was just ranting to Pete and to the audience about sort of being on the ground floor with artists like Chance or with Kanye, where you just feel like you're a part of their crew and their team, and you feel like you're supporting them. You're doing everything you can to let people know about these artists.
And by they get ground to a certain, floor, you mean as a fan?
As a fan, yeah, yeah. Not as a producer.
Okay.
I wasn't in the back of the room with Kanye and like, you know what, how about Jesus Walks instead of Teddy Walks? Teddy Walks, no one knows Teddy. What if you change it to Jesus?
Ooh.
No, I wasn't there. No, as a fan. So I just, in this case, I'm not sure if an exclusive deal is for the fans or if it's for the artist.
I think it's for Tidal, really. I mean, the Kanye and Beyonce examples seem to be the easiest to explain in that they're super tight with Jay-Z and want to pump up a business that was rumored to be completely falling off the map a few months ago. And I know that Lemonade alone got Tidal like over 1 million new subscribers.
Hmm.
So I think that's a pretty easy one to point to, is that they were doing it to help Jay-Z. But yeah, there is the whole question of like, what hoops are you making your fans jump through to get your new record? And will they ultimately turn to piracy instead?
Right.
With the Beyonce case, you know, I read some article where it said, oh, Beyonce's number one on all the charts, Pirates Bay, essentially anything where people can turn to get it for free.
Right.
Beyonce's kicking some major butt.
Well, you just wonder, too, because Chance the Rapper is a good example where he's offered his music and his career for free. And we talked about this last time that really artists are coming to terms with the fact that it's always been offered for free. Record labels were getting that money. And where you really, it's just promotion. What you're really doing is making money on the tour. Chance sort of figured that out. He offered it to free. It's great mad respect in the way that you're like, hey, I get this for free, when it really truly is always free. But this is different in the way that, you know, I have to sign up for a streaming service if I want to get at Chance's free music.
Yeah, I think it makes Chance look a lot less cool, personally speaking. Chance was so ahead of the curve. Him, with the first Run the Jewels album, when it mm-hmm. came out, it was a free mixtape. And that culture seemed so close to the street and so exciting and so like, this is the black market item and here it is on my phone. And oh my God, you have to know somebody who tells you what website to go to. And now that he put himself in the supermarket, there he is, just like everybody else. And it makes him seem, for the first time, just like a little less fresh, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, he's going to have to deal with that at some point as he puts out more and more music that is consumed.
It's true, but yeah. What about the idea that he would have gone through his whole career putting out free mixtapes and after 20 years had this amazing career where he was fully outside of the system?
Yeah, right.
That would have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he's given that up. He's still very adamant that he's not going to be on a major label, and I hope he sticks to that. But it was a really interesting case study to see how long he could have gone on the way he was going. And my heart breaks a little bit that he kind of went to streaming so soon.
Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about the other issues in digital. YouTube, there's really a push to change the law that artists and the digital, what's it? I forgot the name of it, the digital.
DMCA. Just think of the Village People.
We'll talk about the DMCA when we return here on Nerds on Tour. We'll just call it Nerds on Tour, right?
I love it.
Abraham Levitan, who is the man behind the podcast Nerds on Tour, is with us in our new monthly segment. 312-981-7200. If you have a question, if you want to chime in about streaming, about digital, about music in general, the industry, Abraham is here. Stay with us.
This ain't no intro, it's the entree. Hit that intro with Kanye. I sound like Andre, trying to turn my baby mama to my fiance.
Is this new
she
Chance?
Music, she from
I haven't heard it.
Like Auntie Yonce. Man, my daughter couldn't have a better mother.
Oh, I wish I had this song. Chance's new record, Coloring Book, or his mixtape is out on Apple Music. Abraham Levitan is here. He is our guest. It's Nerds on Tour, a monthly segment here where we talk about music industry, both how the issues affect both the artist and the consumer. Mm-hmm. Of course, Abraham does his podcast, Nerds on Tour, which you can find at iTunes. Ironically, as we talk about this stuff, he's also a Chicago musician, and he's the man behind Piano Power, which is about providing in-house lessons, music lessons, from real artists who teach the students what they want to play. How do you do that? If I say, yeah, I'd really like to learn every Chance. How do I do? I'd like Chance. You find an artist that will teach that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't mean to make it sound like it's a walk in the park. You do still need to know a little bit about theory. But a great teacher is going to break that down into elements. So you might first learn the rhythm of a Chance beat. Mm-hmm. And then you might learn like the bass line that makes it so distinctive. And I mean, you know, it's basically about thinking like an actual musician, which you can right. only get from working with a teaching artist. 'Cause real musicians, you know, I think the difference is you hear something on the radio and instantly you're segmenting it out. What is that bass doing? What is that guitar doing? What is that producer adding to it? And the more you can train an 8-year-old to think about music
that way,
that 8-year-old's going to take over the world.
And they will, too, give their music to Apple to stream for 3 months at a time.
God willing. I think by that point, musicians will actually be paying people to listen to their music.
312 says, totally agree with you. We joined Apple Music for the trial, and we're going to cancel in 3 months, but I better remember to do that. I think that's the business model for Apple Music, but he says by then I hopefully can buy Chance's album straight up. But that is interesting because it, you know, a lot of people are probably doing that, right? They're signing up for a 3-month trial, and the whole idea is that Apple is going to be able to keep them there, which is tough because a lot of not great reviews for Apple Music.
Oh man, no. Speaking strictly from my perspective, I could talk for the rest of this hour about how much I hate Apple Music.
Really?
I was so ready to be part of that ecosystem. Yes, Apple. It's just like my phone. It's just like my computer. Of course, I would want to use their streaming service too. But this thing was so clunky, and it would erase my downloads on a regular basis.
Right, right.
compared to Spotify, the recommendations algorithm is so bush league. Like, I think I listened to a Willie Nelson album once on Apple Music, and for the next 3 weeks it was saying, hey, have you heard of Willie Nelson? You might want to listen to Willie Nelson's greatest hits. It was like the circular argument school.
Isn't that the point of a streaming service, to have a good algorithm to turn you on to music that you may not have known about, but is similar to the stuff you're listening to? I mean, you really got to have a good hit rate if you're a streaming service in that algorithm.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm not being paid to say this, but the Discover Weekly playlist that I get from Spotify has blown me away with how eerie it is about hitting my sweet spots. I mean, I think that's a service that no other streaming service has matched. And looking at what Apple was serving up to me, I mean, you know, it was almost to the level of like, have you heard of Thriller by Michael Jackson?
Well, you know what? I'll just go get my music from YouTube like I always do, right? Is that still a thing? Can I still do that?
So you're that guy. You're that YouTube listener.
Yeah, right. So this is going to the artists want this to change.
The way that that YouTube is policed. Yeah, that's absolutely right. There is this act called the DMCA, which was written in 1998, which in internet terms is many, many generations ago. At that time, there was no YouTube. I think about 5% of the population was online in this country. So at this point, essentially what the law says is that if there is copyright protected content on YouTube, it is the copyright holder's job to grab it file a notice to get it taken down.
Which is why you see all the, what, if you've ever been a part of a cease and desist, which I have.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Like when you are putting a comedy sketch up and you might use a Kanye West song, they quickly, a lawyer will contact you and say cease and desist. And you're like, who's got time? You know, I actually, we got a conversation going with one of the lawyers. I'm like, what's your deal? And they're like, we just get freelanced out.
Yeah.
Like, I work for Warner Brothers or whatever, and I get paid just to be able to email you. And stuff.
Well, I mean, Prince, may he rest in peace, was employing his entire family for this purpose. to troll YouTube and look for any instance. I mean, the legendary case with Prince was that there was a mom who posted a 25-second video of her kids dancing to Let's Go Crazy.
And he's like, get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That ain't yours.
No. But oh, essentially, no. I mean, the point is, Prince has time and resources to do something like this. Very few other artists really have the time and resources to be their own police. Meanwhile, YouTube is making billions of dollars, at least partially because of this content. So a bunch of artists from all different genres signed a letter. And you know what happens when you sign a letter.
Right.
Things happen. but in any case, they are pushing hard for this law to be rewritten, essentially to say it's YouTube's job to police itself, instead of asking each artist to file cease and desist.
I would assume that YouTube, just on the basis of their business model, which is to essentially provide a platform and let people go hog wild, is not in favor of being the police.
It would be a major buzzkill.
So do you think there's a chance that the law would be changed? I mean, you'd have to go through, I mean, I guess an FCC, or who would even be in charge of that?
Well, I mean, it's the same question I have about anything involving the government. It's like, who stands up to YouTube? Is Wynn Butler from the Arcade Fire going to go to Congress? I think he could.
Right.
I think he's got the ego for it. But is he going to go to Congress and stand up to YouTube? I just don't know if the artists have the lobbying power to make a change. I hope they do, though. I mean, I think internet...
Well, couldn't they be... I mean, there is some semblance of the record industry left. I mean, a Warner Brothers or a Sony Music, couldn't they be the ones that go to YouTube and say, let's fight it out?
Yeah, that's what it would have to be, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, internet time is, it's just everything changes every 5 years. And so the idea that this law is from 1998 makes it seem really, really old.
Yeah. Well, I hope they don't do that, because essentially I am the guy who will go and find the YouTube clip of the new Chance thing where it's like just a slide. Like it's a picture of like Chicago, and then it's like a 4-minute track. You're like, that worked for me, man. That worked for me.
You know what's interesting, though, is that I've been reading a little bit more about the ways that people trick the system. So YouTube, if it's the actual master recording, they can spot it instantly and say, oh, that's a master recording of a Chance song. That has no business being on here. But people can slow it down by 2%.
And it tricks the system.
YouTube cannot track that.
I will die for you. That's what they should have done. Let's go crazy.
Well,
that changes the vibe of that song a little bit.
It makes it sound a little bit more from beyond the grave, actually.
Abraham Levitan is in studio. Nerds on Tour is our segment tonight. We're talking about the music industry, the issues that affect both the artists and consumers. If you have a question, 312-981-7200. Let's talk about Prince and how protective he was of his music when we return. Does it sound good?
Sounds fantastic.
Stay with us. All right, welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, it's Picnic. Each Tuesday night, we pick a new nickname for a 2016 Cub. It's pretty simple, and it has been a successful segment. We've had Cubs fans come in and help us. Tonight, Brad Zabung from The Heckler is going to join us. We've had successful nicknames for Dexter Fowler. He's Free Range. That's his nickname. That's a great one. Last week, it was Kyle Hendricks. Who's the other one, Pete? It was I don't know why I'm blanking on the other one
from last week.
Yeah,
wasn't it Javi Baez?
Yeah, Javi Baez, Babyface.
Yeah,
Javi Baez is Babyface.
Now, see, I think of Addison Russell as Babyface.
Well, we're gonna get to Addison Russell. He's coming up. We're going with kind of the bench player, middle reliever types.
Okay.
Up to this point.
Okay.
So we had Kyle Hendricks at the fifth starter, and he is the calculator.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
He's an Ivy Leaguer.
Yeah, right. So tonight, and we give away prizes. So the person who comes up with the nickname gets tickets and pizzas and all sorts of stuff. Tonight, we thought we'd do two players. Hector Rondon. Am I saying that right? Rondon?
Yes. Yeah.
The closer.
Yes.
That's a big one. I was almost tempted to be like, that's a one. We only need him tonight, right?
He's the Kira Sedgwick of the team.
He really is. He's
the closer.
He's the closer, right. That you just ruined the whole hour. And we don't have to do the hour now. It's done. So we'll do Hector, and then we're also going to do Tommy La Stella.
Beautiful.
A utility infielder, outfielder. He's an IF/OF. Play anywhere. Tommy La Stella, Hector Rondon. Those are the nicknames we need for Picnic coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. 312-981-7200. You can text. You can call. We got prizes. It's going to be so much fun.
Don't get me going, Justin.
So you can stick around. It is so much fun. People text in with their ideas, and they're hilarious. Last week, I forgot. There was a couple. They're all running together, but there were a couple for Kyle Hendricks that I was dying laughing. People were really killing it, so... I expect the same tonight. All right, Abraham Levitan in studio. We're talking Nerds on Tour. That's his podcast. And we're talking about the music industry, how would the issues of the day affect both the artists and consumers. Abraham, also a Chicago musician. He was the man behind Shame That Tune at the Hideout. And he also does Piano Power, which is a great service that essentially a business where you bring musicians into someone's house, a student, you teach them what they want to play.
Yeah, these are in-home.
Where do you find the musicians?
Well, what an appropriate question you just asked. You know, it's graduation season, Justin, but to Piano Power, that is hiring season.
Oh, okay.
So I want to put a message out there to anybody that knows a college grad who is about to relocate to Chicago to begin a life as a musician. I want to meet this person. We are
the young minds.
Absolutely. I want to mentor them, set up great schedules for them, train them, and college grads that are just moving to Chicago. In a lot of ways, these are the people that I was about 80 years ago, and I am trying to provide the kind of services that I wish I had when I was 22. That explains Piano Power. That also explains Nerds on Tour.
Well, let's talk about your latest episode of Nerds on Tour, Bonnie Prince Billy.
Yes.
This is the episode. Is it out right now or is it coming
it's
up?
It's out.
It's out. Okay, tell me about it.
I had a poster of him on my wall in high school. So it was very surreal to be sitting in his green room talking to him, especially because I had heard that he was kind of a legendarily crotchety interview subject. I mean, there is apparently a famous tape of him chewing out a college radio DJ for 15 minutes that was the central piece of publicity for one of his records.
So you were worried going in.
I was worried, yeah. But, you know, he's, of course, an iconoclast who does things absolutely his own way. But he's also super generous and well-spoken. And so we ended up having a great time. He has some attitudes that I think would shock most musicians, especially in the amount of money he turns down from festivals and licensing opportunities.
Okay. So that's, but for someone of his stature, to have played a career, those are the options when it comes to money, right? For a musician who has a large body of work, there's going to be opportunities all the time where people are like, I want to license that one song. Hey, we'd love to have you play this festival.
Well, I mean, yeah, and I think it kind of goes back in a larger way to what your expectations are for life. I mean, he is somebody who, from my experience with him, and I actually interviewed him once in Chicago and then once back in Louisville a couple weeks later, because we're both from Louisville and I was there for Passover, L'Chaim, and we did another interview in Louisville.
Okay.
So I've seen him in multiple settings, and he has seemed to me to be somebody who is totally comfortable with a middle-class lifestyle. Now, because he has no aspirations to be super big time, I think he can afford to be highly principled in the kind of stuff that he turns down.
Right.
He said, what was that movie with Sandra Bullock and George? They were floating in space, Gravity?
Yeah, Gravity, right.
They asked him to be the closing song for the credits.
Really?
Which I'm sure was like many, many thousands of dollars. And he said, get lost. His argument for turning down licensing pretty much across the board is, I made this song as an exclusive engagement with my fans.
Hmm.
I am telling them that this song is for you. Now, if I turn around and resell it to a car or a movie, now I'm telling the car or the movie that it's for them, and I'm betraying my fans.
It's amazing to hear. I mean, obviously, principled rock stars are nothing new. That's part of it, right? We're not going to sell out.
But they're getting rarer.
But that's what I was going to say. I mean, even the ones that, you know, sell out at the highest level, when you talk about Rolling Stones or, you know, any of the Paul McCartney, you know, like they somehow are able to continue to retain that sort of that fame and that respect. You know, like, they're not sellouts, even though they're on every commercial and every.
Yes, because there is very little reputation penalty for doing that these days. I mean, I did an interview a couple months ago with a guy named John Roderick, who is big on the Pacific Northwest scene, where Death Cab for Cutie and The Shins and a lot of those bands came from. And he said there should be a statue of The Shins in the Seattle airport, not for anything that they did musically, but because they licensed their song in 2000 to a McDonald's commercial at a time when nobody was doing that, and they didn't explode.
Right.
And they didn't.
Right.
And everybody noticed that and was like, oh, I guess this is okay now.
So, you know, one of the other things that you talked about in that interview was just the concept of what you do to reach fans. You know, that he seemed to be pretty sort of okay with having the fan base he has and not necessarily having to reach out.
You're talking about Bonnie Prince Billy.
Bonnie Prince Billy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really two models. I mean, it's do you think PR is helpful to you, or do you not think PR is helpful to you? Now, on the surface of it, PR is always helpful because it's publicity and it gets you new fans and gets you more people to see your shows. But his attitude is, are the people that are with me long term, are they affected in any way by a PR campaign? And he's come down on the side of, those people are really not. Those are the people that are going to support me in a major way over the years.
So I don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
Anything that I do with a new PR company or a push or whatever doesn't affect them anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he said, you know, when I go to a show, I meaning Bonnie Prince Billy, probably incognito. when I go to a show, I can tell who's there just because they read a Pitchfork review. And that's not the kind of show that I want to play. Now, if you take that to its logical extreme, you have Kurt Cobain being driven completely insane by the prospect of playing for people that would have beaten the snot out of him in high school and having to face them every night. So, I mean, that kind of integrity is what Bonnie Prince Billy is all about. And yes, it costs him a lot of money. And I don't think he gets as many cool points for it as he would have 20 years ago.
Right. I mean, are fans even recognize? I mean, you don't recognize him unless that, ironically, unless that becomes a PR.
Sure. Of course.
People aren't going to know that he passed up on a licensing thing or that he's being legit. And I guess it's that these are the stories that are told around the campfires, but those stories are less and less heard.
That's right. And, you know, when I was interviewing Bettina Richards from Thrill Jockey, which is a big indie label in Chicago, she was saying, you know, 20 years ago, everybody knew that we did a 50-50 profit split with our artists. And our fans who bought records bought them in part because they believed in that philosophy. And now she feels like nobody who buys a Future Islands record on Thrill Jockey cares one way or the other, or cares.
They're not invested in that way.
That's right.
Why do you think that is? Is that because of the internet age? Is it because now there's so much and you can press a dollar on anything and buy anything at any time?
I think it has something to do with the idea that you're not forming a long-term bond with one entity in the same way that you used to, whether that entity is a band or a label. You're not following the same dog around the track for 10 or 15 years because with the click of a button, you can go somewhere else in 30 seconds.
Because Spotify, if you like this, you'll like this, right?
Yeah. So I think the whole idea of saying this is my team is not present in the same way that it was. I mean, the 90s were so much about, I have this T-shirt, I have this bumper sticker, I have this mail order catalog.
Right.
It was really important.
And the labels were almost rock stars themselves.
Absolutely.
The Sub Pops and the others. And maybe that's changed a little bit in the way that you can a la carte everything.
Yeah.
Abraham Levitan, we're going to do this every month. You know, we used to do this segment on the download last summer. Maybe we can bring it back, which was it was called Which Is Better. And we had the best one we did was Dr. Dre versus Jay-Z. Right? Like who, and you can use any argument you want.
Yeah.
So I think we should incorporate that into this segment because I have one that for you. Okay. We can do this one next time.
Okay.
Whitney Houston versus Beyonce. Right?
Well.
On first glance, because it's modern, you're like, Beyonce. But then you're like, Whitney Houston, a lot of albums and a lot of hits, lived in a different time, was probably, when she died, you know, one of the most recognizable artists of our time, our generation.
I mean, certainly did so much more drugs than Beyonce could ever dream of doing.
Right.
And Beyonce responds by starting a line of fitness clothing.
But I mean, just on that concept, on first glance, who do you like? Maybe that's what it, who you like. We call it, instead of which is better, who you like. Who you like.
Oh, I mean, maybe up to like 18 months ago, I would have said Whitney Houston, hands down. I think it gets more interesting now only because Beyonce is making a play for having cultural and political relevance.
Yeah.
And that makes it interesting. Like Beyonce is almost positioning herself as like a 60s, 70s artist who is like connected with larger civil rights issues.
Right. She's like the Jane Fonda of her time.
I think what her PR person should probably be saying is that she is the Jane Fonda of R&B.
Abraham Levitan. Who You Like is now a new segment inside of Nerds on Tour. We're going to have Abraham on every month here on the download. You can check out his podcast, Nerds on Tour, which is on iTunes. Also, Piano Power, looking for musicians. If you know any young musicians who want to be molded by Abraham.
By my soothing voice.
There you go.
I also want to let you know that Piano Power teachers are going to be doing a monthly night at the Hideout starting this coming Monday at 10 o'clock. So come to the Hideout Monday at 10 and you will see
All
Piano Power teachers rocking, kind of like the Electric Mayhem is what you should probably picture.
It sounds, I'm trying to think of the plural mayhem. Sounds mayhem-y. Right? Abraham, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin.